Welcome to Diabetes Unplugged. Welcome to this week's episode of Diabetes Unplugged. I am your wonderful host, Nia Henry, and I'm so excited to be back on this side of the internet with you. And we're here with part two of the diabetes Q&A. Now, if you have not listened to part one, I highly recommend that you go do that, okay? Like ASAP. Go listen to part one of the diabetes Q&A. There were some really great questions that were asked, and I'm so excited to be back with part two because, like I told you guys, I got a lot of questions that you guys have been asking, and I want to make sure that I'm answering them for you. Now, before we jump in, like I did in the last episode, I need to make sure that I make this disclaimer. This is for educational purposes only. I don't know your personal health history or the ins and outs of your medication or anything that is making up your current state of health. So just make sure that before you start implementing any changes that you always talk to your primary care physician. And if you're looking to work with me, I am a functional nutritional therapy practitioner and I take an all-around holistic approach to diabetes wellness. So make sure that if you're interested in working with me personally so that I can get to know your health history and help you reverse diabetes, check out the information in the show notes, okay? And I would love to work with you guys. So I don't want to take up too much time on this intro because I know that you guys want to get to this Q&A. And again, it's going to be a really good one. I get super just happy to be able to answer you guys' questions in the wording and the way that you ask them, okay? So we're going to jump right in with the first question of this episode, which is, can you get amputated if your A1C is 6.2 and you have a wound on your feet? Wonderful question. The simple answer is yes. You can definitely get your foot amputated if your A1C is 6.2. Now, I broke down the different levels of insulin resistance according to your A1C in the first diabetes Q&A. But basically, if you have an A1C between 5.7 and 6.4, that puts your level of insulin resistance in the pre-diabetes range. Now, when it comes to foot amputation and all that kind of stuff, nothing is guaranteed, right? There are some other questions that we do have to ask, like, is the wound infected? And if it is, how bad is the infection? Has the infection spread, right? Are you doing anything to try to keep your blood sugar under control in order to prevent, you know, the infection from spreading or in order to increase your insulin sensitivity? So there's a lot of different questions that we have to ask and be able to unpack here. But in simple terms, can you get amputated regardless of what your A1C level is? Yeah, but when your body is in a state of insulin resistance, that puts you at higher risk of amputation, which is why, number one, you want to make sure that you are taking care of your feet. But also, number two, you want to make sure that you're doing your due diligence to make sure that you lower your A1C to not be on the diabetes spectrum. And so that way you don't have to worry about amputation to begin with. And that's why I told you, you know, in the first episode that when you are pre-diabetic, it is just as serious as type 2. And a lot of times we have this mindset of, well, I'm not as insulin resistant, or my level of insulin resistance isn't as bad as someone with full-on type 2 diabetes, or I'm not on medication, or I don't have to supplement with insulin or whatever. And so we feel like we have time, or that we don't have anything to worry about. And also because pre-diabetes in and of itself usually comes without symptoms, right? Like a lot of times, not all the time, but a lot of times the symptoms like frequent urination and fatigue and, you know, excessive thirst and stuff like that doesn't usually happen until you are type 2 diabetic, which is why out of the 96 million people in the United States that have pre-diabetes, they don't know that they have it because a lot of times it doesn't come with symptoms, right? But if your A1C is 6.2, you are pre-diabetic, and if you have a wound on your feet, what I would encourage you to do is definitely go see your doctor, ask questions, like see how bad, you know, the wound is, see if it's infected, see how far the infection has spread, and go from there, okay? But hopefully that answers your question. The next question I have is, since starting my journey, I've done great with my blood sugar. However, recently when I take my medications and I eat, I'm now struggling with low blood sugar. What do you do? So if you are noticing that when you take your medication and you are dipping into, you know, a hypoglycemic or low blood sugar episode, it is time to talk to your doctor about seeing if it's time for them to either decrease the dosage of medication that you're on or decrease the frequency at which you're taking it or come off of your medication altogether. If you've been doing great with managing your blood sugar levels, it's high likely that you're becoming more insulin sensitive, which is a great thing. So that means that you're not needing as much medication as maybe you did before. If you're also taking into consideration how balanced your meals are and what you're eating, if you're eating, you know, non-starchy veggies and you're increasing your body's carbohydrate tolerance and you're doing all those kinds of things, these are all great things. You know what I mean? So what we don't want to do is take low blood sugar lightly, obviously. And so by you submitting this question, it shows that you care, which is great. And the reason why I mentioned that is because when you're used to having high blood sugar levels, a lot of times the mindset is, oh, I got to lower my blood sugar, low blood sugar, low blood sugar, low blood sugar. And we make that the goal. But that's not the goal. The goal is not low blood sugar. The goal is balanced blood sugar, because having low blood sugar levels is just as bad as having high blood sugar levels. So what I would recommend that you do is definitely talk to your physician, let them know what you're doing, how you've made changes to your diet, your exercise, and all that kind of stuff, and explain to them, hey, when I take my medications before my meals, my blood sugar goes really low. What can we do about it? You know what I mean? So have that conversation with your doctor. It sounds like it may be time for you to, you know, come off the medications altogether, or at least lower the amount of medication that you're taking. The next question says, I'm kind of disappointed. My A1C is exactly the same as it was 6 months ago, a 7.1. My triglycerides are 407 and my cholesterol is 300. I'm so upset with myself right now. The very first thing that I want to say is it is definitely normal to feel disappointed when you don't see changes in your A1C and there's been ample amount of time in between your last visit. And it's also very normal to be disappointed in yourself when you do see changes, but they're going in the opposite direction of what they should be going. So I empathize with you on that, and I understand that you're upset right now, and that is okay. And hopefully by answering this question, it gives you some guidance on what you can do and some changes that you can make in order to help decrease your triglyceride and your cholesterol levels. So what I want to say is this is one of the main reasons why your diet is so very important. When you have a goal of not just balancing your blood sugar levels, but addressing the root cause of diabetes, which is insulin resistance. I need you to understand what insulin resistance is, okay? Because if you don't have an understanding of what insulin resistance is, you're never going to be able to reverse diabetes. Diabetes can only be reversed by reversing insulin resistance. And if your triglyceride levels or your cholesterol levels are elevated, that's going to make it a lot harder to be able to do that. And here's why. Insulin resistance means that the cells in your liver and your muscle tissues are clogged. So every time that you go to eat in a normal, healthy, functioning body, what typically happens is you put in food, which is fuel, right? And your body breaks that food down, and naturally your blood sugar levels are going to elevate because you just put in energy, right? It's like putting gas in your gas tank. The gas meter is going to go up because you just put fuel in. Well, it's the same thing for when you're putting food in your body. Your glucose levels are going to naturally rise. It's supposed to do that, right? Because that's the energy that your body uses in order to get from point A to point B, or to get from breakfast to lunch or lunch to dinner. You need that energy to hold you over. What is supposed to happen is once your blood glucose levels elevate, your cells in your liver and your muscle tissues are supposed to open up, because insulin comes out of your pancreas and says, hey, we got a lot of sugar in the bloodstream. Let's open up and store it for later, right? And so insulin goes to your cells and say, all right, cells, open up. I got some glucose for you. And then once they take that glucose in, then your blood sugar levels come back down and you're good to go. But what's happening in your body, because your body is in a state of insulin resistance with your A1C being 7.1, so you're in the type 2 diabetes range, right? Because your cells are insulin resistant, that means that they don't care that insulin's job is there to open up the cells and let glucose come in. insulin is still being released from your pancreas, but when it goes to your cells are just kind of like, I don't know what you want me to do, playa. We ain't got no room up in here for glucose. The reason why they don't have room for glucose is because they're already full. Your cells are already full of fat, okay? That is why your cells are resistant or unresponsive to the role of insulin, and therefore your glucose levels stay elevated, okay? So when we're talking about things like triglycerides and cholesterol, those are types of fat that is, you know, going throughout your bloodstream. So your triglycerides is just a type of fat that's floating in your bloodstream. And when they are high, it means that your blood is very thick and fatty. And this is why we have to address the diet. A lot of times when you are diagnosed with diabetes, the idea or what is being bashed into our head is go low carb, low carb, low carb, low carb. We have this idea, or we have been conditioned to believe, that carbs are the issue, right? But we're not being told the difference between the types of carbs. And we're also not being told that carbs are actually really important for reversing diabetes, because you need to be able to increase your body's ability to tolerate carbs in order to fully reverse the condition, right? And so a lot of times when we're told that carbs are bad, we automatically start getting rid of all the carbs in our diet. But what we also do is we increase the amount of fat in our diet, right? So we're taught that, hey, if I eat meat and I eat cheese and I eat, you know, if I prioritize protein and all that kind of stuff, our mind automatically goes towards animal products. And so we're increasing the consumption of animal products, not realizing that they come with a high amount of saturated fat, okay? When you're eating heavy amounts of saturated fat, yes, you're also getting in cholesterol, and your triglyceride levels are going to be elevated, okay? And so what I want to encourage you to do, if your goal is to lower your triglycerides and lower the inflammation, lower your cholesterol, balance your blood sugar, you know, lower your A1C, I want you to start prioritizing more fiber, more fruits, more vegetables in your diet. Consume a more whole food, plant-rich diet. That doesn't mean you have to be 100% plant-based, but it does mean that you need to start consuming more whole foods and decreasing the amount of animal-based products in your diet, so that way you can start seeing changes in your blood sugar levels, and also so you can start addressing the root cause of diabetes, which is that insulin resistance. Because if we understand that insulin resistance is the result of having fat take over the cells, it doesn't make sense for us to still consume in heavy amounts the main thing that caused the issue in the first place. Make sense? So make sure that you're eating more fiber-forward meals, prioritize your fruits and veggies, decrease your meat and dairy consumption so you can decrease the amount of cholesterol and, you know, dietary fats going into your diet, and see how much that changes for you. Okay. I know that was a very like long-winded answer, but I feel like it was helpful. All right. So the next question says, I have been diabetic for 26 years. What is everybody's meal plans? I want to be healthier and I would love recipes from you guys. I feel like I eat pretty healthy, but I want to know some new recipes to switch some things up. I'm so glad that you asked this. And what I want to encourage you to do is definitely get things like different cookbooks, or use different avenues like Pinterest, or, you know, just different things like that. Because a lot of times, sometimes we can feel like we're eating the same things over and over, and we just need to switch it up a little bit. What I would love for you to do is also get access to my cookbook. I have a digital cookbook where I have over 70 plant-based recipes that are specifically designed for people living with pre and type 2 diabetes to help you reverse insulin resistance. I will have that in the show notes below. And it's also part of my 8 ebook bundle, which is basically the best diabetes resources that you can get to help you be able to reverse insulin resistance. So you can get my cookbook, you can get my herb guide, you can get my diabetes guide to skincare, you can get my Power to the Penis handbook. All those things are available in my 8 ebook bundle. All the links for that stuff will be in the show notes. So thank you for asking about that. And I would love to support you, right? Next question says, I am at 171 after eating an egg and cheese omelet. I didn't have any toast and I didn't have any veggies on hand. This is not the number I expected, and I'm very frustrated. Okay. this goes back to what we were talking about as far as insulin resistance and saturated fat, right? What I need you to understand is, again, you said you didn't have any toast. You probably avoided the toast because toast is bread and carbs and all that kind of stuff. And you've been taught that that is bad. What I need you to understand is when it comes to regulating your blood sugar level, the issue is not that your blood sugar elevates. The issue is that your blood sugar stays elevated for longer than it should. So when you're eating something like an egg and cheese omelet, you have cholesterol, you have high saturated fat. That is what is going to keep your blood sugar elevated. And so if your blood sugar is 171 after eating.
I want to take a quick pause from today's episode as I introduce you to a game-changing resource that can really help you amplify your diabetes journey. What if there was a way for you to get access to the best diabetes resources without having to pay for extensive programs or spend time, effort, and energy trying to DIY your diabetes journey all on your own? Well, let me introduce you to the Queenie's Nutrition 8 ebook bundle, an exclusive collection curated from Dominating Diabetes Academy without the long-term commitment. Dive into the hypertension handbook, savor 7 days of plant-based breakfast, explore the diabetes skincare guide, and so much more. Click the link in the show notes to explore this exclusive bundle and elevate your diabetes journey with ease. Now let's get back into today's episode.
That I'm assuming, again, there's missing information. So I'm assuming you checked it 2 hours after this meal. That's why it is remaining elevated. Okay. And so I want to encourage you, maybe your start is, you know, have less cheese or crank that down to one egg if you had two, or trade that in for a more plant-based high protein option. Maybe you do a tofu scramble, or maybe you do, you know, something else for breakfast like chia pudding, or have more fruit or something like that in order for you to be able to address that insulin resistance. And everything that you do, you have to address the insulin resistance. That doesn't mean that you'll never be able to eat an egg and cheese omelet. It just means that maybe adding that toast back and maybe adding more veggies to that omelet, decreasing the eggs and decreasing the cheese, would help your blood sugar level to become a little bit more stable so it doesn't stay at that 171. I don't know what it was pre-meal, but again, if it's 171 post-meal, that just goes to signify that it's contributing to, or you can contribute that to your level of insulin resistance. If you want to address insulin resistance, you have to increase your body's carbohydrate tolerance. You have to eat more whole foods. You have to decrease the amount of saturated fat in your diet. Eggs and cheese are high in saturated fat. That's going to be your result. Okay. Let's see. Next question. Why are we as diabetics more likely to have a heart attack? I hate when I get a pain in my chest and I think it's my heart. Okay. Yes, that is very, very scary to have a pain in your chest and automatically assume it's a heart attack. But being diabetic definitely does increase your risk of heart attack and stroke. And the main reason for that, without getting into all the medical terms or whatever, the reason why you are more likely or at higher risk of having a heart attack or a stroke as a type 2 diabetic, honestly, is because the level of inflammation and stress that is going on internally inside of your body. That is why balancing your blood sugar levels are so important. But that's also why we say diabetes is not the issue, right? Diabetes is not necessarily going to kill you. It is the complications from diabetes that puts you at greater risk. So yes, a lot of people are looking at the blood sugar and the blood glucose part of things, but you have to consider the heart disease part. You have to consider the liver disease part. You have to consider the inflammation, the cholesterol, the triglycerides, the weight gain. You have to consider all of that and the amount of stress that that is putting on your body. So when your body is in a state of insulin resistance and your blood is really fatty because of the overconsumption of saturated fats and animal products, your heart has to pump harder and work harder in order to force blood to your other organs and tissues in order to keep them alive, right? So if all your organs, like your heart and your kidneys and your liver and your pancreas, are having to overwork themselves because of insulin resistance and because of the inflammation and because of things not really working in harmony the way that they should, over time, they're going to burn out. And that sounds really scary. And I don't want to say this to, instill fear in you or anything like that. But I've always said that diabetes is an invitation for a transformation. You are being given an opportunity to do things differently so that you can save your own life. And saving your own life does not necessarily mean being on medications for the rest of your life. Pre and type 2 diabetes are lifestyle diseases. So they are impacted by the way that we eat, the way that we manage stress, the way that we move our bodies, the way that we are just overall taking care of ourselves. You know what I'm saying? The way we're sleeping, all of that plays a role in your body's level of insulin resistance and in your body's ability to function harmoniously. Everything has to function like an orchestra. Everybody has to play the same tunes and the same thing in order for it to create one sound and for things to be flowing. But if it's not that way, then everything sounds like it is chaos. Everybody's playing a different note. Everybody's playing a different song and things just sound chaotic, right? And so when it comes to, again, not just balancing blood sugar, that's a big part of it. But we also have to consider the other things that contribute to our inability to balance our blood sugar. Like I said, how are you sleeping? How well are you managing stress? Are you moving? Are you getting up every day and just laying in the bed all day or sitting at a computer all day? Or do you work from, you know, a desk all day? Those things are going to matter. And so some small things that you can start doing in order to reduce your risk of having a heart attack is getting out and walking every day. Can you walk for 10 minutes after a meal? Start doing that. Adding more vegetables to your plate. What vegetables do you actually enjoy? Do you like bell peppers? Do you like mushrooms? Do you like asparagus? Do you like broccoli? Do you like, what do you like? Are there any leafy greens that you like? Kale, spinach, arugula, Swiss chard. What do you like? And start eating some of those. Not saying, you know, you can never have foods that you enjoy. But again, you have to look at your overall lifestyle, because everything that you do is contributing to either disease or wellness. At the end of the day, that just is what it is. And that's not to say you're never going to have an off day or an off week. But that is to say you have to start prioritizing the habits that are going to lead to better results, that are going to take the pressure off your heart, that's going to get your body, you know, able to respond to insulin again, which is going to get your blood flowing a lot easier so you're not having plaque buildup in your arteries. These things matter. Okay. Y'all know I be on here hollering. I be preaching, but I care about y'all. Okay. I care about y'all. All right. All right. Here we go. Next question. Can I ask about tofu? It's a soy product and it contains 1.5 grams of carbs. Can I eat tofu? Absolutely. You can eat tofu. Tofu is great. It is a very high plant-based protein source, which is great. I love tofu because it's very versatile. I've made cheese and pasta sauces from tofu. I've made creams and toppings and dressings and all kinds of stuff from tofu. I make eggs from tofu. I make, you know, there's all kinds of stuff that you can do. You can make chicken nuggets from tofu or, you know, tofu steaks, like a crispy chicken sandwich type of vibe. Listen, if you're not following me on Instagram, please make sure that you do, because I have recipe stuff coming and I'm going to get your life right with tofu. But tofu is great. It's really easy. It's very versatile. You can turn it into anything. And like I said, it's very good for, you know, balancing your blood sugar levels and all of that kind of stuff. So to answer your question, absolutely, you can eat tofu. It's really great for you. If you're somebody that is not big on soy, then you might want to avoid it. But also what I will say is just consider other, you know, high fiber, plant rich protein options. You know, beans and legumes are great. You know, nuts and seeds are great. You know, I love hemp seeds. Those are really high in protein as well. You know, you have some options there. Let's see. Next question says, I'm recently type 2. Metformin does not work well for me. What should I try next, please? If metformin is not working well for you, and I'm curious to know, it didn't give me like the details of why it's not working. I don't know if this is not showing significant changes in your blood sugar levels, or if you're dealing with, like, you know, the gastrointestinal issues of metformin, like most people do. Maybe the answer is not more medication. Maybe the answer is shining light on your daily lifestyle habits and figuring out what lifestyle changes we can make to naturally lower your blood sugar. You know, that is what I would say. If you're finding that there's medications that are not working for you, or there's medications that are giving you like adverse effects that you're not comfortable with, if it's making you nauseous, if it's giving you diarrhea, if it's giving you yeast infections, if it's doing all of that, medication is a band-aid. at the end of the day. Medication is a band-aid. It will always be a band-aid. It is not going to do anything to reverse the root cause of diabetes. It makes us feel good because sometimes when we take medication, our numbers appear to be better. And then if we take into consideration, you know, our A1C test being an average of what our blood sugar levels are over 2.5 to 3 months, if we can take enough medication to keep that number, you know, where it's supposed to be and keep that blood sugar level, low to where it lowers our A1C for us, we feel really good about it. It's the feeling that medication allows us to get as far as like emotional satisfaction of seeing our numbers decrease. However, again, it's not addressing the root cause of insulin resistance. So as soon as you get off of the medication, or as soon as you start eating more carbs, or as soon as you do X, Y, and Z, your blood sugar levels are going to be as high as they were before, if not higher. And so again, pre and type 2 diabetes is all about your lifestyle. If medication is not working well for you, or you're having a bunch of, you know, side effects as a result of medication, honestly, and this is some tough love, it's time for you to do the work. It's time for you to do the work. It's time for you to stop relying on the band-aids. It's time for you to, you know, establish better habits. It's just time for you to start loving on yourself a little bit more and doing the things that you know you should be doing in the first place, because by not doing it, that got you to where you are now. You know what I'm saying? That's just a little tough love for you right there. So how about not asking, what do I try next? It's really, what do I need to do that I've been avoiding doing because maybe I don't believe it's possible for me. Maybe I have some blockages that are stopping me from being able to believe that I can reverse diabetes. Maybe the thought of it's going to be hard is, you know, crippling you or whatever. Listen, it's time to do the work. At the end of the day, is nobody can do the work for you. I can't do the work for you either. I could tell you what to do, when to do, how to do it, all that kind of stuff. But you have to do the work at the end of the day. Stop relying on medication. It's not doing anything for you. All right. Stop looking for instant gratification. All right. That doesn't mean that reversing diabetes has to take long. Again, give yourself 2.5 to 3 months. If your A1C can lower in that amount of time, if you make the right lifestyle and dietary changes within that amount of time, because listen, we're already almost halfway through the year. You got this. You got this. Time is waiting for nobody. All right. And the time is going to pass anyway. Sometimes we get so caught up in how much time it's going to take for us to see the results that we want. Listen, the time is going to pass anyway. Where do you want to be and how much progress do you want to have made by the time that time passes? It's up to you. Okay. I'm going to go for one more. Last question of this episode. Why is water so important? It's in every suggestion on how to manage blood sugar, but I don't understand why it's important. Really great question. All right. Water is super important for many reasons. Okay. Number one, when you are diagnosed with diabetes and you have elevated blood sugar levels, one of the main signs of that is frequent urination, which also triggers frequent thirst. Okay. What happens is your kidneys are having to overwork themselves in a way to protect you because your blood sugar levels are so high. So what your kidneys do is they recognize, hey, our blood sugar level is really high. We need to flush this out as quickly as we can in order to, again, keep you safe. I'm going to pull all the water from all your other organs, from your liver, from your tissue, from everything. I'm going to pull all the water from inside your body in order to flush this excess glucose out through your urine. Well, then when your body is pulling all of the water and it's flushing it out in order to balance your glucose levels, you become dehydrated. When you become dehydrated, that means that your organs are also becoming dehydrated. Everything needs water in order to survive. Right? From the food we grow, the plants outside, your body is over 50% water. So if your kidneys are naturally pulling all of the water, you know, in order to flush glucose through your urine, you have to replenish that. Because by doing so, you're going to make sure that you have enough water in your system so that when your body does have to pull from your organs or whatever, it's not leaving you high and dry. So drink your water, and not just water, but you need to be hydrated, and hydration doesn't come from water alone. So this is why it's really also important for you to eat your fruit, because you're also going to get the electrolytes and things from that as well. Or people like, you know, electrolyte powders and all that kind of stuff. The, as far as electrolyte powders, they are not all created equal. A lot of them have high levels of sodium. And if you're not doing a lot of, you know, strenuous exercises where you're sweating a lot or whatever, you may not need, you know, super top-notch electrolytes or whatever. But that's besides the point. Water is important because it's going to help to balance your blood sugar levels by diluting the concentration of glucose in your blood and also helping your organs to function optimally. Your body is also already in a state of inflammation. So water is going to help cool that body down, regulate your temperature, push out toxins, doing all that kind of stuff. All of that is very important for blood sugar regulation. Okay. If you're not sure how much water to drink, I would start by doing half your body weight in ounces. All right. If you're 200 pounds, try to drink 100 ounces of water. And that's just going to ensure that you're adequately hydrated, and you may have to work up to that point, which is perfectly fine too. But that is all the time that I have for you guys today. I hope that this was really helpful. I hope that you enjoyed part two of the diabetes Q&A session. I think I'm probably going to be back for a part three because we got a lot more questions that I need to answer for you guys. But let me know if this has been helpful. Make sure that you follow me over on Instagram. I post every single Tuesday something in regards to the daily or the weekly, rather, not daily episode. Lord, I can't handle that right now. But the weekly episode. So make sure that you come over and just let me know what you took away from today's episode. Let me know how helpful it was for you. And I'm going to see you guys next week. Take care of yourself.
Thanks for tuning in to this week's episode of Diabetes Unplugged. If you enjoyed this conversation, follow me over on Instagram to join the ongoing discussion sparked by this week's episode. You can find all my social media handles in the show notes. And you can also show love by simply giving me a 5-star rating and review on Apple Podcasts. And for more insightful blogs, support, and other digital downloads, head over to queenieatsnutrition.com. Until next time, take care and keep striving for your health goals. See you next week.